Meet George Jetson. His boy, Elroy.
Are the Jetsons.
Daughter, Judy.
Perhaps the ultimate 20th century vision of the future.
Jane, his wife.
Flying cars, robot maids, and weird-looking houses shaped like discs. Hello, Anthony Fennell here, and welcome to the program. Now, in just a second, we'll meet a man who collects and collates historic predictions, and we'll also begin the first part of a new irregular series called Getting It Wrong. That's Getting It Wrong with a question mark. The idea is we'll take a past prediction and haul it over the coals. Today's topic, the paperless office.
When you're dealing with information on a computer, you tend to see what's directly in front of you. So you see a page, a screen's worth of information. If you're dealing with a mobile device, that might actually be quite a small amount. You know, it might be 140 characters of a text message. Having tangible things in 3D in front of you does allow you to see things as a landscape, as something more dynamic.
I think there's a real issue with putting ideas purely onto digital files and they disappear onto one person's computer, whereas if they're on somebody's desk or they're on a post-it note stuck to the side of a computer, they're far more visible. I mean, there's even a wonderful story of a guy called Leon Heppel, who is a researcher in the US, who had one of the most fabulously messy desks ever. And he actually it was so messy, he had to put large sheets of paper over the mess so he could build a second layer of mess at one point. And because of this, he accidentally found letters from two researchers that were completely unconnected, but he saw a connection between the work these two researchers were doing, which actually led to a Nobel Prize. Now, I don't think that would have happened if all his files had been digitalised.
Richard Watson and Matt Moore. They're up shortly, so stay tuned.
What will life be like in the future? Will we see gleaming cities and unimagined scientific marvels in the years to come? In this moving picture, we'll peer across time into the year 2000, into the astounding world of the future.
Gaze it often takes the passing of time for the full stupidity of some predictions to become apparent.
And look, personal transport pods hurtling down super boulevards at lightning speed.
That's not to say that every or even most predictions of the future are wide of the mark. But if you are in the predicting game and you get it wrong, well, of course you'd hope your mistake just quietly disappeared forever. What you definitely don't want is someone like US-based Matt Novak coming across it and then posting it on his blog. Matt describes himself as a paleofuturist, an accidental expert, he says, on past visions of the future.
I was actually taking a writing class in college. One of the assignments was to start a blog. The other students were starting blogs about their cats or what they had for breakfast, and my life not being that interesting led me to sort of pick this niche topic that I've been thinking about for a very long time, and it just kind of took off early on. I had 30,000 hits within the first 2 weeks, so it kind of became something that I had to keep feeding and keep finding more things about.
And how do you research material about past visions of the future?
Well, I'm a huge research nerd. I love going to the library and looking at old newspapers and such. So I've put in a lot of time collecting things, and I've got quite an odd assortment of books because, as you say, you know, it's a rather specific thing. So there can be a book that is about agriculture from the 1930s, and it just so happens that there's a chapter within that book that looks at what they thought the farm of the year 2000 would look like.
And I presume once you build up a head of steam, people start contributing material to you as well.
Yeah, I get emails all the time from people that have found something, usually online. I really enjoy when someone finds something and scans it for me and is able to contribute that way. But usually when someone sends me something from online, I'll notice that I've already posted it and kind of contributed it already from my own library. So that's kind of funny.
Okay, Matt's library of past predictions is called the Paleo Future Blog, and there's a link on our website. But I expressly forbid you from going there until this program is finished. Now, I don't want to turn this into a giant advertisement for Matt's site, but what's engaging about it is that it isn't all text. It's highly visual.
Some of the most popular things on my blog are comic strips from the 1960s. One of my favorite comic strips from that era is called Closer Than We Think, which ran from 1958 to 1963, syndicated by the Chicago Tribune. and it was illustrated by Arthur Radbaugh, who did these wonderful, lush illustrations of what the future held with a little bit of text on the side, and they'd show, you know, the solar-powered car of tomorrow, or the monorail of tomorrow, or the robot housemaid of tomorrow.
All right, look, before we go much further, I'd better ask you, I guess, about your favorite past prediction of the future.
Well, there is this article that I really love from the year 1900 that ran in the Ladies Home Journal. It was about what the year 2000 was supposed to look like. It was by John Elfrith Watkins, who I believe was a mystery writer. He prefaced the whole article by saying these are rather conservative predictions, and some of them were fairly spot on. There was predictions about how heat and cooling would be pumped into homes of the future. But there were other things like the complete eradication of animals, that there would be no need for animals in the future, so we wouldn't have them. I thought he said that we'd only have horses in zoos and that there would be absolutely no need for any animals in the future. So that tends to get a chuckle out of people.
Now, on your blog, you break down these predictions decade by decade, starting from the 1870s. Have you identified, you know, any common themes? Does each decade have almost its own type of prediction?
Yeah, that's part of what's fascinating to me about this idea of the future. Each decade is informed by its own time and what, you know, more so its own time than what they actually thought the future would be like. You see this in the 1930s or the 1970s or today. I'd argue that those are similar decades in the sense that there was a lot of pessimism and a lot of fear about automation, robots putting people out of jobs. One of my favorite things to find are these depictions of robots from the 1930s. People were convinced that it was going to put everyone out of a job and, you know, what are we going to do? And whereas when you see decades when people are more prosperous, such as the 1950s, you get predictions like flying cars and jetpacks and all sorts of, you know, colonies on the moon, which are certainly much more techno-utopian.
Now, you mentioned earlier that sometimes people got their predictions correct. Are there instances where the predictions, though, haven't exactly happened as originally forecast, but have developed in perhaps unintended ways?
That's the interesting thing for me, is no one has ever been completely correct. That, to me, is the exciting thing about futurism. People pick apart predictions that I might deem wrong. There's always elements that people are pulling from that are accurate. One thing that comes to mind, in the 1950s, they were predicting this handheld TV, which, you know, had these big awkward buttons and it was round. And in a way, in a form, we have that. You know, I have a phone that I can play video on and all sorts of odd technology, but it's not in the exact form that it was predicted, you know, even 10 years ago.
Now just make yourself at home, Rosie.
Yes, ma'am. I'll get right to work, ma'am.
Oh, that must be Elroy back from school. Oh, no, not again. You're not Elroy.
No, ma'am, I'm Jimmy. What's for snacks?
The student homing device must be breaking down again. Hang on while I press the reject button, Jimmy.
Hurry the dirty.
I think the Jetsons was an important program that only lasted one season in its first run. I think it was 1963. And it's amazing to look at what impact that had on at least American culture, that this idea of a flying car and walking your dog out on a conveyor belt and meal pills, all this was taken. It wasn't necessarily sincere in the sense that we are overblowing all these ideas that are already out there in the ether, as it were, but they certainly informed, you know, whenever I talk with people about this subject, the battle cry is, where is my flying car? Where is my jetpack? People feel as if they were owed something, that society owes them these things that were promised to them when they were young.
And look, you know, I can't let you go without asking whether you actually indulge in predictions yourself.
I try not to. Once I started the blog, I quickly realized that no one knows the future, and that's the exciting part, quite frankly. I mean, because no one can be certain what the future holds, that's all right with me.
Well, Matt Novak, creator of the Paleo Future blog.
Arrivederci.
Thanks for having me.